It's not about paying people for every task that they do for you. It's about the amount of work that women do in society and in the household and in relationships to maintain the basic livelihood of the family or the home or friendships and stuff that is unrecognized as work.
Welcome to Sage Takes Time.
This is not a cooking show, but it will nourish your soul.
I'm Amira.
And I'm Elisa.
In this podcast produced by Womena, we open up a space for honest conversations with our community.
In this season, we'll explore global movements shaped by generations of women
and speak to guests who dedicate their lives to redefining narratives around women's rights, health, pleasure, and creative expression.
Today, we're going to talk about
the feminist economy.
And talk about, yes, the feminist economy. And within that, we're going to talk about weaponized incompetence, what that means, unpaid labor, what that looks like, unpaid care work, and how we can fix the dynamics
of society
that exist all over the world. Help us.
We're going to fix the world in this episode alone.
Yes.
Are you ready? Like, I woke up this morning and Amira, like, was like, are you awake? I was like, yeah, I've been awake for like an hour. She's like, oh my God, I've been waiting for you to wake up. I made breakfast.
How cute is that?
Yeah. I haven't had anyone make me breakfast in so long.
That's really sad.
Are you used to, do you like making people breakfast?
Yeah. And I also like, you can make me breakfast tomorrow.
I'm very grateful for that. How can I repay you for making me breakfast and housing me at your house for the entirety of the recording of this time?
You brought so much cheese that I think you've paid all of the team.
Yeah, I did.
For any kindness they have ever shown to you.
What I was trying to get to was that Amira just did nice shit for me without me asking her to do it and probably not necessarily expecting me to repay her in any way. It was some sort of unpaid labor.
This is different.
Why do we let friends do stuff for us for free, but we don't want our partners to do shit for free for us?
No.
Yeah, that's a question.
It's not the same.
Why is it not the same?
Because we don't live together.
Why do we?
I wouldn't make you breakfast every single day if I live with you. I mean, I might, but like if I feel like you're not doing anything for me in return, then it's going to get exhausting.
What if I like make you dinner?
Sure.
Is it a tit for tat thing?
No, it's a balance thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not a pay thing.
It's not about paying people for every task that they do for you. It's about the amount of work that women do in society and in the household and in relationships to maintain the basic livelihood of the family or the home or friendships and stuff that is unrecognized as work. Emotional labor.
Yeah, emotional
labor. Physical labor,
huge.
Manual labor, like all of those things that is unpaid. And the idea maybe, I don't know, like we'll discuss this throughout, but I don't know if the idea is to like monetarily pay you per hour. Maybe that's one way people are thinking about it, but it's also about balance, I think. So if we're both doing labor for each other, mm-hmm. then it feels balanced. But if one person is taking on a majority of that labor and
yes.
that person tends to be the woman,
yes.
then you have to think about how does that affect her life and how does it benefit your life? If in the partnership and you're like the man,
right, in heterosexual,
how does that affect your life and how much do you benefit from that labor that goes unrecognized?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it's about.
I really connect with the idea of emotional labor in what you're saying also. Like I get the physical labor is like obvious that there's labor in physical acts, but
yes.
what's harder to pinpoint is the fact that there's also labor in carrying a majority of the emotional weight in a relationship.
The baseline is, and there is physical manual labor done every mm-hmm. day to maintain life.
Yes.
To manage life, to
yes.
manage social obligations, to manage chores,
yes.
To plan for tasks and plan for groceries. And there's like a mental effort that's spent on thinking about the
yes.
things that make up our life. If we live together, if we're married, if we have a family, then if there are kids, then there obviously there's a lot more layers involved.
Yeah.
If you're the caretaker of a family member, مثلا, like a mother or an aging father or something, يعني, all of those things that majority of women are expected to perform that function
yeah.
in that role in life. And
we've been socialized like that since we were born, though.
Right.
Like, it's coming. Is it just that it's like a, like, it's really, I understand that it's an imbalance and it's unfair, but it's like literally been unfair forever.
Are you playing devil's advocate, or are you actually like saying that?
No, it has been unfair forever. Like, right. I was raised to carry most of the emotional labor, take care of all the social needs, and like organizing and managing our social circles with partnerships.
Yeah.
To take care of a home and cook and clean and take care of whatever our needs. If we have kids, I am supposed to take care of the kids and their after school activities and what they're consuming and the majority of the raising of them. One of the reasons I don't necessarily want children is because I don't want to take on those responsibilities.
Okay.
So what's the shift that's making this, like, bringing it to light now that we're giving it a term? What is shifting to where we're actually naming it as unpaid labor?
I mean, I think it's part of the conversations around women's issues and women's role in society and feminism and equality. And like, it's part of that conversation is this like huge facet of women's unrecognized labor or invisible labor.
But okay, so what, that, I think what I'm trying to say is that to me, it's not invisible. Like, it's a very clearly visible.
No, to you, it's not invisible. Right.
Right. To me, it's a very visible inequality.
Right.
That's like widely accepted.
Can you imagine if you're not you with the knowledge?
Okay. Who am I?
You're someone that maybe is not as aware of any, maybe you're not a woman. Maybe you're not as aware of these things, and you see it as a given that this is the role women play. So yeah. It's not seen as labor. It's just seen as a function. This is your function.
Right.
And on the other end, there are other stereotypical functions that men have to perform, and there's pressure on them in society. Masan to be the provider. Haget keda that is also being questioned. I just think that when it comes to the idea of unpaid labor and unpaid care work, it's just that society functions heavily relying on that as a baseline, as a foundation.
Yeah. And it actually upholds society's functioning point blank.
Right.
Are we only naming this inequality now because society has been shifting into more of an individualized type of life? Couples are more isolated than ever. And so instead of having a collective culture with community around you that can all kind of participate in sharing loads, in sharing labor, in sharing the gathering of food and the raising of children and the accumulation of resources and the safety and the, you know what I mean? Like, the caretaking of the environment used to be shared by everyone in the community that was around.
Mm-hmm.
Even in terms of like providing for the couple, it was providing for the couple within a tribe or a collective of people. And that providing was participated in by all the parties, both men and women, right? It was participated in by all of the different people. Whereas now, you're like, you get in a couple, you shack up, you live together, and all of a sudden, we're now separate from our parents, we're separate from our friends. They are also individually, like, isolated in their own little couples. And all of the responsibilities of that are now split between two people. These inequalities have been around for a very long time. As society has been becoming more individualized, right? And women have been more isolated from each other. And, you know, men take ownership of their land, and within it, they put their women and their children, and all of that is kind of separated and owned. You're like, there was this de facto assumption of like, women have certain roles in a couple.
Yeah.
But it never had that terminology of calling it unpaid labor. Like, people didn't even recognize it as labor because people thought that it naturally came to women to be nurturing and caretaking.
Right.
And so it's not even a job. It's like, it doesn't take effort or energy for you to do any of that because women are naturally more sensitive in their eyes, and women are, whatever the stereotypes say, women like to take care of the home, and women like to nurture children, and they're there to be caregivers and things like that. So people don't even put the word labor to it, let alone then calling it unpaid labor.
Right.
Because then the idea is like, even if we recognized it as labor, there's also an assumption in these heteronormative, like, traditional gender roles that men are the ones who are providing food, money, you know what I mean, home to the couple that allow, that pay for the woman to then do those other things. Mm-hmm. Whereas now that's no longer the case, because also nobody can really survive on a single income household anymore anyway.
Yeah.
And not only, I think that's what it is, like also, that's also highlighting it, is now women are in the labor force.
Yeah.
So they're recognizing, oh, this is work also. Yeah. And I'm also getting directly paid for this work.
Exactly. I agree. I don't think it, the community elements and how things used to be and like the setup of society and how things, people function different roles. I think that's one part of it. But I think the bigger part is this very thing, is like the idea of the dynamics between partners now, particularly, I think it's like more highlighted within a partnership, within like a partnership where you are living together or you're married or there's a family. It's much more highlighted because the amount of work that has to be done is so much more. And it's usually probably one person doing it. That person, like you were saying, used to be the woman, or there is an assumption that it's the woman, or like women are caretakers and nurturers. So they just do it without thinking or without feeling physical effort or pain or whatever. But now with women also working and that need there, there is a lot more, the expectations, I think, and the reason that people come together and stay together are different. That comes from women being more in the labor force, women having more financial independence, women thinking in a different way about like what they want for themselves and their mental health and their physical health and things that affect them on the long term. I mean, it applies, I think, to working women and non-working women, but I think it's even more augmented if you are also working and then you still have somehow the same expectations on you as this like natural caretaker and nurturer and caregiver, when in fact, these are things that take up a lot of work and they take up, yani, there's the physical element, the physical effort that you put in, but there's also the time. Mm-hmm. So I think there's also this, the advocacy behind this idea of unpaid labor and recognizing it as such, and then figuring out what we can do to mitigate these issues, is the amount of time it's taking from a woman's day. How much time does it actually take to care for a child? How much time does it actually take to breastfeed? Mm-hmm. How much time does it actually take to do the dishes and laundry? And as you're going about your entire day, to mentally be like checking things off of this like mental list that you have of buying like, you know, eggs and milk and bread and whatever, and knowing that, planning ahead, making sure those things are in the household. Those things are usually done by women, and it's quite unfair in a modern partnership to still have that same expectation, whether the woman is working or not.
Yeah, but I don't think what used to fly in partnerships 40 years ago is going to fly today. Like, women expect a lot more from men, but I think men still expect the same amount from women, and it's not about, it's not exactly balancing, and people aren't really realizing like what that actually looks like.
Yeah, I think I always go back to this example for like the men in my life. And no, if you take like a azuma, like if you're having people over, and this can be in like a family context, or if you're just two partners that are having friends over, or if you're a big family that's having like a Ramadan fitar, for example, and you look at the amount of work that actually goes into that. And that is not just about recognizing the amount of work, like the amount of hours and work it takes to like go grocery shopping and cook the food and then clean up afterwards and stuff. It's not just as a labor. It's also like, this is one thing that makes up a happy life, community, bringing families together, bringing people together. So it's not just like you're doing a physical act, like you're just washing the dishes just to get the dishes clean. You're also bringing people together and hosting these functions that have many purposes in life. They're also to create, it's a social obligation sometimes, and sometimes it's like a, something you do out of love for the family, and sometimes it's like a Eid or like an occasion that, there is like traditions that are being upheld. There is community that is being built. So to not recognize that that's heavily falls on the woman, and then the amount of work that it takes to accomplish it is kind of the reason that I feel like a lot of these things are deteriorating. Like the idea of community, I think it's deteriorating globally because women are so exhausted and burnt out.
Yeah.
And so if you're gonna at all think of your mental and physical health, and you maybe can take things off your list, then maybe the first thing to go is like, well, we don't have to have those people over because I'm just so exhausted already.
Right.
But maybe if we shared more as partners, then we would both be putting in that work.
Yeah.
And it starts from picking the day to coordinating everyone's schedule that's supposed to be there, mm-hmm. making sure it works for everyone. And then having like that hostess vibe or host vibe of like really inviting people and making them feel like they're really wanted to be there and making sure everyone's there, and then planning like all the drinks and what the house, the decor and the food, and then cooking it and then making sure there's someone yeah. there, all of that.
And then setting up and then cleaning yes. it afterwards and then continuing to be able to prepare for whatever you had to do for the next day.
But also that is a lot of mental and physical effort mm-hmm. that some people, if they have the means, they hire people to do that.
Yeah.
And so to expect women to do that on the regular and be like the bedrock of society and yeah. community, I think that's where like people want to name it because it's so unfair.
Yes.
And it has just been like seen as a given for so long, whether it's because women were not working as much or whatever, but either way, it was unfair. It was unfair that it goes so unrecognized. And so I think like a partnership demands that that is a shared labor.
Yeah.
Or it better be paid. Someone better be paying. You know what I mean? Like,
but is that your solution then?
It's not my solution. It's like the solution of a lot of people that have done like research and studies globally to try and I think the key is to quantify mm-hmm. the amount of unpaid labor that is
right.
done. Just like you were saying, like, why are we labeling it? And yes. we talk about language all the time and how important it is as part of like narratives and debates and stuff. Anything that starts with, like, can you just take care of yourself.
Yeah.
It's already a kind of like what I think maybe called like the infantilization of men. Yani treating men as if they're like fragile and you cannot ask them too much.
To do
so,
more.
Yeah. So, and this is kind of also part of how we were raised as natural caregivers and nurturers. And on the other side, you're taking care of the men in your life.
Yeah.
Like if if they don't want to share in the labor, then how can you tweak and be flexible and kind of people please and appease them in many ways and ask them like very little and mm-hmm. not expect too much and move your standards around so that that's not an expectation that you have to cater to their needs and their capabilities. That's also a way that we raise that's part of the problem.
Yeah, for sure. How many times have you heard like, just be quiet with them, you know, yeah. just say it nicely or don't give them too much. They don't know how to do these things because yeah. they weren't socialized or conditioned early on in their life to know how to host. This is a generalization, by the yeah. way. And I will also say that I had in my partnership, for example, it had to start. I assumed automatically, even though I just assumed that I would still be the one who would spend more time taking care of my home. That ended up not being the case at all in my relationship. And actually there was very much like an agreement of we each are going to start with a baseline of like the minimum is we each take care of our own shit. As if you live alone and you have to do your own laundry and you have to do your own dishes and you have to make your own bed and you have to clean your own bathroom, you know, like to a certain degree, we each start with a baseline of taking care of ourselves, but then we have a home that we share, and those responsibilities then are kind of like openly discussed and shared and tallied kind of like without threat. It's not something that I have to like tiptoe around to be like, okay, we have people coming, and he's actually very good at like stepping in and would much rather be in control most of the time and like do a lot of the things that are required. So
this is not like the norm.
It's not the norm. Yeah. And it was actually to both of us, what we realized was that it felt normal and healthy for us. But when we compared it to every other couple in both of our families and most of our friends, that was not what was replicated. Like there was nobody in his family. There was one who was like a foreigner who actually cooks, like a man in the family, in the entire family system who cooks in the household is one. Mm-hmm. On my side of the family, there's one.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. Like, we don't have other examples. And there's still the assumption that, la, no, the woman, inti, sitt al-bayt, al-bayt la'ilik, you decide what goes on, how it gets done, who, like, it's your responsibility to dictate, like a CEO, what and how you want your house to operate and what you need where, and you're the one who gets the furniture and you're the one who chooses the decor and you're the one who cleans all the dishes and you're the one who has to decide what the soap is that you buy and what the dish powder, like the washing, clothes washing liquid powder is. You know what I mean? Like, all of these things were just assumed and still are assumed. And if my dad calls me and I'm doing my own laundry and I'm hanging it up, he's like, great, and you're doing both of your laundry. I go, no, it's just my laundry. He does his own. He goes, what? How can you let him do his own laundry? How could you? You're going to drive that person away.
Yeah.
You're going to end up alone. And I have to just calmly realize that it's just such a shift, actually, to start from a baseline of you each take care of your own shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, everything can kind of get split through communication. I had the assumption that it was on me to take care of my part, like what it meant to take care of my partner meant that I had to take care of like the entire surroundings plus my partner's entire emotional state at all times, right? And their well-being. Until I was probably like right into my 30s, to be honest. I really thought that that was my responsibility, if I was a good partner, was to help them manage everything in their life. And this was like you spoke on the infantilization of men, where they can't handle it, or like it's too much, or if they get angry, like it's to you to like speak to them calmly and help them like manage the way that they are and what they need. And without, it was never ever expressed to me that you need to find a person who can take care of themselves, and you need to take care of yourself, and then find a way to come together to help each other in going through life. Like, that's it. And when I got into my 30s and I realized how much of the emotional weight, because I did have like, I wasn't necessarily living with a partner that much before. Like, I never really lived with a partner before my 30s. So I didn't have the expectation to take care of, you know, their physical world, but the emotional world that I had to take on, and the amount of like, unfair, what I felt was like unfair pain, where there was so much room and energy and effort spent on managing that emotional world and their comfort and their happiness and their relaxation, and zero space for my own.
Yeah.
And if anything were to happen in my world, it was not welcomed. It just was, there was no space to deal with it in the relationship. And actually, it would trigger them, and then the energy would flip, and it would be about comforting them. Because I had done something, I had just had a life that happened, and I would have to like then make them comfortable with the fact that they felt weird and my needs were completely not met. What switched into my 30s was that now I don't have that expectation whatsoever. Like, now I very much expect my partner to handle their emotional needs first and foremost, and for me to handle my emotional needs first and foremost, which is very difficult also, like to not expect them to do that. And in between, be able to navigate and live respectively with a person and handle all of the different elements of labor that are required in order to just live a cohesive, clean life, you know?
Yeah. I think when you were saying before, like the idea of like, there's this one man in this family that cooks, and there's this one other man in this other family that cooks out of like dozens of meals, whatever. And I feel like a lot of the time it comes down to like, oh, but so abiyot bukhiani, like, he cooks when other people don't, or like he can do laundry. Like, the expectations are so low that it then becomes very diluted to like, well, he cooks, so like you should be grateful.
That's better than 75%.
Yeah. فخلاص يعني انه بس شو بيطبخ يعني شاطر يعني like good. He's at least learned how to do that. And I think like you were saying, like you should be able to take care of yourself fully before entering some kind of partnership or partnership or cohabitation or marriage, so that you fully understand all the effort and time it takes to do all the different tasks that are required of just day-to-day maintenance of life and hygiene and cleanliness and stuff. But I think there's also this element of sometimes if a man cooks, for example, it's kind of seen, it's almost like a performative act for some reason. you know, there's this like this grandiose, right. like I'm entering the kitchen, you know? It's like all of a sudden, like the chef has entered the kitchen and then there is like
he made me dinner last night. Wow. He made you dinner last night? Oh my God, he's a keeper. He's so good.
Yeah. Or they're like the way that it's done is like maybe not super... also, this I'm generalizing. Like, obviously, there are people that can do these things well and fully and stuff. But a lot of the time, you'll find that like he cooked and they're left like chaos in the kitchen. And then it's almost like the amount of work it takes to then clean up after the supposedly nice thing that this person did, or like the shared part of the labor somehow creates more work for the other partner.
Yeah,
and so
that's so true. I mean, yeah. I will say, I just want to be like super honest in the situation. Specifically for me, those roles were reversed. My partner is way cleaner than I am. I enter the kitchen, maybe not anymore, but let's say 2 years ago, when I was cooking, it was a mess. Like by the time I was done, it was like a huge mess. And then I would sit for like an hour and then I'd be like, oh, okay, now I have to go clean it up. And I'd like trudge and I didn't, maybe I cleaned it a bit, but I was like, also just sometimes I would call a maid service and I'd be like, okay, they're going to come at least twice a week so that they can come and like make sure I'm clean. Cause I didn't know how to like clean as I go. It was something that I had to learn to do to carry my own weight. And I actually, the roles were reversed in my relationship where he had to teach me that like, listen, just like you use the bowl, you put the bowl in the sink and turn the water on and like rinse it as you go. But I do think like for the majority, the disproportionate majority, but I don't want to sit here and be like, yeah, that's the case when I'm literally living in a situation where like I found the opposite and as if I'm superior to people who do that.
Because I think the idea of like being in a partnership is figuring out where, what those elements are.
Yeah.
What those tasks and chores and daily things that are needed are and how do we as partners want to divide that labor?
Yeah.
Because it can very well be that like in some partnerships, either the man or the woman or whatever, either partner can say, I don't mind doing all the house chores as long as you do like X, Y, and Z, for example.
Yeah.
I think the point of labeling and quantifying unpaid labor and care work is to give it a shape and a volume and like a value we're not considering as a society or as partners on a very individual level. The amount of time we're taking away from women's life to do these things, that, and then go the step further to think of what could you do if you had all that time?
Yeah.
Or if you were being paid for all this work, because what ends up happening a lot of the time, let's say in like a more modern relationships, like you were saying, two income households are almost like a must now. So how do we now fill the gap that now exists because the woman is now working?
Yeah.
So what do? We hire a nanny or a cleaner or a helper or a driver or a maid, whatever, and we pay them.
Yes.
So why do you, I think that's also kind of how it came about. So like, if you look at how much you pay a cleaner, for example, or a cook, or a chauffeur, even if you don't have kids, just to maintain your like day-to-day life, if you look at how much is being paid versus if you... if you were able or free and had the time and energy to do that, you would not be paid for that. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, that's what made it super clear, I think, to people. And I think also just something in our language that needs to change is this idea of like the man or the father in relationships is like a helper. So like the words like, oh, he's babysitting the kids today, you know, when actually he's just being like a parent, or he's helping around the house. I'm happy he helps around the house. When, oh, well, like, what is the help if it's a labor that you both need to, it needs to be done. Like,
yeah,
what
is,
why is it called a help?
That's so such a good point.
These kind of words that are in language that is used, I think people are trying, especially when it comes to like partnership and parenthood, particularly, to stop saying things like he helps with the kids, he babysits the kids, because his role as a parent should be equal to yours in contribution and in effort.
Right.
So it even comes down to like this idea of like how much hours is unpaid labor and how much does it cost? Like that's kind of a bigger notion that might be harder for people to grasp. But the language we use on the day to day is a little bit easier, because then that translates into the expectations that you have of the person that you're sharing a life with, or the people around you in the family that should help with the functioning of life together. So it's not so much helping, it's like division of labor and not like I'm doing it. And whenever you do it, you're helping.
Right.
So I'm grateful, even if it's like kind of little compared to what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Or even if it's not done well. And that's kind of the idea now of also something that's been like more recently labeled as weaponized incompetence.
I'm sorry, weaponized incompetence?
Yes.
Okay, that's, I don't know. Actually, legit, I don't know.
I told you, you need to get on TikTok. I don't know what to say. Like, just, everyone's like nodding there.
Is it all over TikTok? So sorry, guys.
You'll find it next year. I'm on more of Instagram a YouTube. Reels.
I'm like a. So shady.
He's so shady. Sorry,
she tells me I'm always late to the game because I do Instagram Reels and YouTube, but like, okay, cool. So TikTok, teach me.
Yeah, I don't. I'm sure TikTok didn't create it, but it's made its way on TikTok somehow. Any, but
the weaponized idea, incompetence.
Weaponized incompetence.
Can I guess what it means before you describe it?
Okay. Have you really not heard it before?
Wallahi, I don't know it.
Okay,
I'm not playing like this is like not amazing. Devil's advocate.
I'm actually surprised.
Yeah.
Okay, tell me what do you think it means?
Okay,
I mean it's like pretty self-explanatory,
right? But I don't know who's weaponizing the incompetence at this point. So okay. My question is like, why I'm asking you to find it is because it's not obvious to me if. Who's weaponizing the incompetence towards whom?
Okay, what does it sound like
as
to
in,
you just
does
hear?
The partner, does, let's do in a traditional, like, women are expected, you know, to take care of all this stuff. Is the woman who's carrying most of the load weaponizing the incompetence of her partner against the partner?
Oh, would you do that?
By saying, you're so, like, you're incompetent, get out of the fucking way, you don't know what you're doing, this infantilization of, you know what I mean? Like, you don't help, you need, or is it weaponized in the other way where they're just saying, oh, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, that you do it better, I'm completely like incapable of this, like they're putting themselves down.
Yes.
They're embracing their own incompetence and then using it as a manipulative weapon to make you feel good about doing all the bullshit.
You got it.
Really?
Yeah. So I think there's any... The way that it's used is the second definition you gave. This idea of like not knowing where things are, not knowing exactly how to clean this thing, not knowing exactly how to organize this thing. Like, oh, but you always put away the laundry. Oh, but you know how to like organize this closet. Maybe you know which detergent we buy and you know like the chips that the kids like and you know like which kid has allergies in their school. And it's weaponizing that incompetence.
Yes.
By the man and their relationship. Expecting the woman to pick up the pieces and make sure that everything that needs to be done is done in the way that it needs to be done, in the time that it needs to be done, and make sure that everyone's needs and desires are taken into consideration and account. And so the idea of weaponized incompetence is labeling that so that we can talk about it in a way where we can say, like, it's an incompetence that you should not be comfortable with. You should seek to learn. Like, there's... It's not enough to recognize that this thing needs to be done. I don't know how to do it. So now I expect you to do it. And when you do it, like, oh, you did such, it's great. And you always do it so much nicer.
Yes.
Kida.
Oh my God, yes.
Putting more and more burden and labor and time and energy taken from the woman. And then kind of giving yourself 1,000 ways out, weaseling your way out, kind of like these
purposefully
expectations.
Doing it badly. So that they never ask you to do it again.
Masalan, that's kind of like an extended assumption of that. And for it to be also intentional and purposeful, that you are actually like aware that you're doing that and you're doing it on purpose is like another level of weaponizing the incompetence. But I think the more, now that people have given it a name, you're seeing so many different examples of it online and women like kind of demanding, recognizing it and also demanding that not be the case and kind of talking about how this is to be a full partner, whether it's like a coexisting in the same house, you're cohabitating, you're living together, you're a husband, you're a father, or you're even like the son in the household or whatever role you have, whatever like you are in that household, to not just accept this level of lack of knowledge and awareness and know-how and use it to your advantage, because then it gives you more time to rest or to do your own thing or to have a hobby. They also like, there's a lot of kind of trends that then stemmed out of that, which is like this idea that men have hobbies and women don't. And then women are like, oh, guess why? There's no time.
Right.
Like by the time you kind of get to thinking about yourself, you're already so exhausted. So you, all you want to do is rest. And even the idea of rest sometimes is seen as like a negative, and women are not really like comfortable in resting and not doing anything, because usually your brain is running over time to catch up on all the things that you have to think about and prepare for the next day and the next week and this holiday coming up and all of that.
But isn't there a paradox in that? Because at the same time, like, how many women who want to start businesses have those businesses dismissed as hobbies, for example, or like severe work that they're doing, like really serious work that they go to a paying job at a real company. They say, oh, this is a hobby that they do. Like, they dismiss also women's serious attempts at labor as playful in some way, you know, but women don't actually have like real hobbies.
I mean, not all. I'm sure a lot of women have hobbies. I just think in like the context of that conversation, there's like a lot of more realizations that are coming about, because now we're like recognizing this thing that exists in so many households and partnerships and family dynamics. What was your question?
Yeah, I have a question. That's regional, okay? Very often in the region, not everywhere, but a lot of places in our culture, we still live at home with our families, with our nuclear families, until we get married.
Yeah.
We're not expected to live with a partner out of wedlock, first of all. So very often, men and women stay at home and perform the roles that they're expected within their nuclear family household before immediately having their first experience of cohabitating and being responsible with their partner.
Yeah.
And like, I want to also highlight why not only is this division of labor and unpaid labor an issue in like Western countries and even in like more, you know, gender neutral, gender balanced cultures, but like, even in our culture, when you live at home, who takes care of you? Your mom. Your dad doesn't really like take care of you. It's like, especially we go to previous generations, it's always the mother who's at home, who's taking care of the household, who's doing your laundry, whether you're male or female. They're just taking care of your food, your laundry, your cleanliness, your agenda. They perform all those tasks.
Yeah.
You then get married and you're allowed to move in with somebody for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
At which point, women immediately adopt the assumption that they too must be responsible for their partner, and the men immediately adopt
that's not the assumption
that they need to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're so used to being taken care of, one party assumes that that's going to continue, and the other party comes in and takes over that role.
Okay, but that's how we're raised, Yanni. That's not the moment that you assume that responsibility. Like, women, I'll speak for myself. Like, I was raised, and a lot of the women around my friends, my cousins, like, our social circles, like, you are raised from a very young age to respond to people's requests.
Of course, I was a hostess.
Yeah.
And like, my whole life, when I was a child, I was still a hostess as a girl.
There is a thing of, like, in Azuma, there's a gathering of some kind. Like, the young girls can be like, go make us the tea. Or, like, which of these did you cook? Did you help mama? Sayati mama? Which of these? Like, you're expected, by the time you get to that point, you're expected to know how, as a woman, to know how to cook, to clean, to take care of yourself, to cook certain traditional dishes as well, to host people, to do the laundry, to do all of those things.
What I'm trying to get to, and maybe I'm not like expressing it, is like, if you don't get a chance to live on your own, because earlier we were saying that we each as individuals, regardless of gender, need to learn how to take care of ourselves before entering into partnerships so that we know what it feels like to take care of a single life.
You're saying, how do you take care of yourself if you don't live on your own?
Yeah. How do you ever get a chance to take care of yourself, to know what it feels like to do your laundry, to clean your home, to buy your food, to cook your food and feed yourself?
But this conversation is happening also with younger mothers that have like new mothers that have like still toddlers, and they're raising their kids now. And how are you raising your son so that he doesn't grow up to be that guy?
Right.
So that he knows how to do things from like a very young age and is independent and self-sufficient and can clean up after themselves and knows how their way around the kitchen and doesn't have that kind of incompetence growing up. So the conversation is not just like, a way to attack and criticize the current dynamic and like more
right.
normalized or expectations and dynamics. It's also to figure out how can we, where does it start and how can we like.
Yeah, but do you hear the irony in the way you said, where does it start? You express young mothers raising their sons.
Yeah. But that's it's the same. That's what I'm seeing. Like,
but kids don't learn by being told. Kids learn by watching other people do.
They learn by both.
Men need to see their fathers doing those things.
Sure, sure.
In order to learn to do them. Sure. فيك تساعد ماما وتعلم. You know, like it's not. That hasn't helped anybody.
I say young mothers, particularly because you're talking about the region, and a lot of the time in this conversation, a lot of like. You'll find a lot of like women, especially if they're like newly married or not even just newly married, but you'll say like, "Mahiya ummu rabbitu ala kita," like it's his mother raised him this. So there's the critique of the woman and the role that she's playing in society now. And there's the critique of the mother that raised the son this way so that now he is this person who has this weaponized incompetence. That's very, very unfair. And you're totally right that like part of raising a child should include seeing a model of what it should actually look like, not just being told what to do. So there's both.
Yeah, like there's that responsibility both. Is definitely not on the mother to necessarily teach her son, but it's on, sure, the values taught in the home,
yes.
But the physical example of seeing what that is. And if you're raised by a single mom, then that's your example and that's your only thing. But if you're raised by a two-parent household and one parent very clearly you don't see participating in those things, and that's the parent that you're kind of modeling yourself mm-hmm. after, then it's just this kind of like prohibitive to evolution, right? To that growth and that equality that we're looking to get. And I guess what I'm trying to think is we're talking about it, we're naming it, but when it comes to our region, it's so difficult for me to, well, I just wonder if like, what are the things that are going to be needed in our region for that to change? Is it just the conversations that we're having?
I don't want to make it a regional thing. I don't see why it should be a regional thing. This is a global problem. And it's like for me, like I wouldn't specifically root it to the region and then look at what needs to be changed since this is a part of a global discourse that's happening. So right. Obviously it's not like an Arab thing and it's not like an Asian thing. It's not like an American thing. It's really like a global problem. So generally dynamics in society needs to change and the conversation needs to change. And I don't think we have to wait until like this younger generation of men are raised so that inshallah in the future, like things will be better. Like the idea of having this conversation is that you're able to maybe sit down with a partner.
Yeah.
And not just say like, I would like things to be more equal in like more of an abstract sense, because that's also another like way of diluting that demand or expectation within a partnership dynamic. It's like, oh, I kind of don't really know what you're talking about. Like, what do you mean? It didn't take you that long to do this thing. Mm-hmm. And now you have these things that you can talk about, unpaid labor. You can talk about weaponized incompetence. You can talk about these things to recreate the dynamics in a current partnership that you have. If you're unsatisfied with the division of labor, if you're single, if you're a working woman or not, if you're a mother or not, either way, there's a lot that it takes to like make life happen on the daily. And you shouldn't be doing all that work alone.
Yeah.
So,
or if you are, get paid for it. A feminist economy basically shifts the principles of economic structuring of society away from heavy reliance on unpaid labor that's very often like taken for granted, like we've been talking about, mm-hmm. and towards a more equitable society that actually fairly compensates people for what was otherwise not compensated and taken for granted.
Yeah, I think an interesting thing that's also kind of making the rounds online currently is this idea that like if a man gets divorced, they will much more often remarry and quicker than a woman would. And people are trying to like unpack like why is that the case? And a large part of it is due to like this very conversation, you know, like the benefits of being within the mental health, emotional, the labor elements of life mm-hmm. that benefit a man within a structure of a marriage mm-hmm. or some kind of partnership, like long-term commitment, are much, much more. Whereas for a woman, there's more burden
yeah.
within that. So women who are divorced will maybe not remarry, or they will be much slower maybe to remarry compared to men because of the benefits that are derived that are very invisible.
Yeah.
These invisible benefits that are derived from that kind of structure.
Yeah, and actually just also, we're talking about labeling and words and naming things, just being in a dynamic that you then label a marriage comes with it so much weight of expectation, so much performance from both parties, that if you just say, oh, I have a partner, or I have a boyfriend, or I have a girlfriend, you don't have the same level of expected participation, right? You don't have the same expectations. When you have a marriage, there's all of a sudden, there's like a whole list of things that you as a woman are expected to bring to your husband. Yeah. But if you just say you have a boyfriend, nobody's expecting you to go clean your boyfriend's house and make your boyfriend's food and take care of all of your boyfriend's responsibilities.
Sure.
So I'm sure that women who've already been through the marriage and they've broken through the chains and the bonds of like, yeah, if it was an imbalanced situation,
right,
then they break free and they're like, oh yeah, I don't need to go back into a structure that confines me into these,
yeah,
assumed roles.
Yeah. I think what you're saying about the feminist economy and like this kind of feminist lens on all of this, mm-hmm, including like chores and household labor and motherhood and being, mm-hmm, a parent and all these things, it's within that lens, then that's where all of these conversations are happening, mm-hmm, to make things a little bit more, an attempt to make things more equal and balanced in society, so that women have the time and the energy and, mm-hmm, the space to also have opportunities and dreams and hobbies and rest and all of these things
that men get to benefit from.
The majority of women kind of are in more of a scarcity mindset, mm-hmm, in those areas because they're taking care of everything. And the vice on the other side, men are being taken care of, so they have, yeah, more of that time.
But I would also say that if we're looking at the feminist economy and we're talking about shifting, even entertaining the idea of shifting away from capitalistic centered kind of abusive labor mindsets, the question goes, who's going, okay, it's unpaid labor, fine, we want to make it paid, who's paying? Mm. Who pays, yeah, in that, right?
I think there's actually models now where there are some countries testing out or trying to figure out what can pay, like how can we make the unpaid labor paid? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like giving, in a different way.
Yeah.
It's kind of like policies that give women a right to like menstrual leave.
Right.
Whereas that was something, and in most places still around the world, that you have to just deal with, mm-hmm, invisibly as a woman. We don't want to see it. We don't want to hear it. You don't get time off. You don't get to rest.
Mm-hmm.
You have to perform at the same level that you've always been performing, even though this thing is happening in your body on a monthly basis. So in the same way, there are some studies and case studies being done where there's like an attempt to pay caretakers for the labor that they do that otherwise they wouldn't get paid for.
Yeah, there are actually case studies where that's actively happening, but I want to also mention that it's not then assumed. I don't want people listening to this episode to say, oh, what am I expecting my partner to then pay me for the labor that I'm performing? It doesn't necessarily have to be like still an individualistic goal. We would need to reimagine and restructure our systems so that they're overall more equitable, and that governments with taxes, it's a society grouping,
yes, yes,
where there's tax money allocated to help in recognizing and compensating people for the unpaid labor that they're taking, whether they're men or they're women, but that labor itself should be recognized. Yeah. So nobody's really actually like there, but people are starting to, especially more socialists, probably more socialist countries are trying to break through what it means to have that kind of recognition and that kind of unpaid labor compensated fairly within this current capitalistic structure. Yeah. So in Iceland and Finland, for example, they don't center GDP growth as part of a successful metric for, mm-hmm, their countries. They actually are centering like well-being of their population and however they measure that. And when we talk about switching systems, we don't have to completely like destroy all of the elements of capitalism, but we do have to break fully from what it centers and measures as important in the first place.
Yeah.
So that's going to take a really long time. But I think like we are seeing some places where it's starting to slightly break through that little, yeah, you know, glass wall and provide some aid and some compensation and pensions and social security to people who are doing those roles, for example.
That was a journey.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Sage Takes Time. Make sure to comment, like, share, subscribe, tell your friends. What else do we want them to do?
Yeah, honestly, if you're interested and able to become a member on YouTube or a paid subscriber over at Apple Podcasts, we really appreciate that. That supports us a lot as an independent media company.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Sage Takes Time.
We'd like to thank our team behind the scenes who helped us bring this to life. Our director, Ridma Ikenayaka.
Production manager, Hadi Ghaffar. Videographers and editors, Ayel Husseini and Rawan Masalhi. Lighting by Fadi Habashi and Andrew Habib. Title design by Magdi Hussain and Nulul Zayed. Graphic design by Malak Ayman.
We executive produced this podcast and our beautiful set was brought to life by art director Monica Abadir with the help of set assistant Ghaida Hamam and props master Mahmoud Taima. We would like to thank all the artists who generously loaned us their inspiring work and made this feel more like home.
Mona Al-Ketib, Fatma Abadoma, Rina Haney, Laila Teg, and Agnes Mihalchik. Our fits included pieces by fashion designers Amina Kay and Nurhan Skoot. And thank you to F4 Farah Jewelry for providing us with some beautiful statement pieces. Our location partners are Dot House Studio, and the title track was created for us by talented artist Lil G Fresh.
This podcast is produced by Wamina, a media company spotlighting stories of Arab women through a feminist lens. We're an independent platform, so every subscription and rating, review, and share goes a long way to help us grow.
Make sure to follow @Wamina on Instagram, subscribe to our YouTube channel for the full video episodes, and find Sage Takes Time on your favorite podcast platform.
Thank you for supporting us and being a part of this community.